Broadcasting Company presents Tales of the Foreign Service, a feature in NBC's University of the Air, written and produced in cooperation with the State Department, dedicated to the personnel of the Foreign Service. The material used in this series is based upon the confidential files of the State Department, much of it never before released to the public. At no time in the history of the United States or of the world has it been so necessary to train and maintain a foreign service of the finest possible caliber. The importance of all branches of our State Department in each chain of command, from clerk to ambassador, has been highlighted by recent international events. Tonight's program is devoted to a study of the making of an ambassador.
Of an officer of the Foreign Service is bounded by the discipline of the service and his obligations to its country. On duty 24 hours a day, he is a living representation not of the average American, but of America as a world power. His conduct is circumscribed by international custom and usage, and he must weigh every act in the light of the effect it will have on the reputation of the country he represents. As he progresses in the service, he becomes more and more of a public figure, and his conduct is more and more closely scrutinized in all its details. When he reaches the highest post, he may be the personal representative of the President of the United States. A Foreign Service officer may start as a clerk, as did our present ambassador to Italy, James C. Dunn. As a clerk, after 5 years, he may take the Foreign Service examination, which entitled him to become an officer. Or he may get interested in the Foreign Service in another way. Let us take the life story of a man who finally advances to the highest diplomatic rank. Let us call him, for the sake of our story, Jack Phillips. How did Jack Phillips get interested in the Foreign Service? Listen.
Congratulations, my boy. As your college president said, this is your own personal commencement. Your commencement of life.
Thank you, Dad.
I suppose it's rushing the issue a bit to ask if you have any plans. Trying to be a good doctor allows me the chance to be a good father in many cases, I'm afraid.
Well, I've learned one thing from you. But even though people don't always pay their bills, you've got a great deal of satisfaction out of life in doing a job that helps people. You're the happiest man I know.
But does that mean you want to go into medicine, son?
No, Dad. I was never cut out to be a doctor. You're ideal for it, and I respect what you are and hundreds of friends you've made by doing what you could to solve their troubles. And I'd like to help solve people's troubles myself, but in another kind of way.
Well, that makes me very happy, son, but I don't understand.
Well, I've heard a great deal about the Foreign Service of the State Department.
Oh?
I'd like to take the exam. The way the world is going, I'm glad I majored in history, but now, instead of studying it, I'd like to live a little bit of it.
Well, I'm proud of you, Jack. I'm glad we were able to give you a college education.
So am I. Of course, it helps, but I've heard that you don't actually need a college degree to get in the Foreign Service.
No?
Bob Foster, the druggist son, he's going in, too, and he only went through high school.
But, Jack, there's another thing. I don't have the money to help you anymore. Don't you need more than the salary you'd get from the State Department to keep up, appearances and to fulfill your social obligations?
Well, that used to be the case, maybe, Dad, but they're raising the pay. Mm-hmm. And you don't need a private income anymore. You get allowances for necessary expenses.
Well, I didn't know you'd gone into things so thoroughly.
Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, I have been asking around and reading up on the Foreign Service. And this letter in my hand is a definite inquiry to the State Department in Washington. Today is another kind of commencement for me, too, Dad.
Admission to the Foreign Service is by examination. Nowadays, as then in the 30s, the standards of admission are severe and exacting, as they should be, for a service which is required to protect and advance the interests of the United States. To be eligible to take the examination, applicants must meet the qualifications as to age, citizenship, marital status, education, and language proficiency.
Gentlemen, those of you here gathered have met the requirements, and you're entitled to be examined for appointment as Foreign Service officers. The examination consists of two parts. The written examination, which will continue through four sessions, two today and two tomorrow. You must attain an average grade of 70 or better to be eligible for the oral examination. You will be timed. When I give the signal, you will open your papers and begin. All right? Get set? Begin.
Jack Phillips found that he was examined as to his ability to read with comprehension and reasonable speed. Here was a sample question.
That night, Frederick Douglass was fleeing north to Canada. Before a week ended, he would be on the high seas. England would hold him safe. His was not the only flight. The Virginians had found an old carpetbag at the Kennedy farm. Maps were in it, crude military plans, a provisional constitution, and hundreds of letters. Therefore, turn tail, men in the North, humanitarians. What does it matter that it was you who put money, pikes, rifles into the old fellow's hands? You who said, "We do not have much faith in your ideas, but we believe in John Brown. So tell us nothing of your plans, nor burden us with inconvenient knowledge. We want no report save action. You see, we must consider our honor, and in this way we shall be technically innocent." You never dreamed that you could be so compromised in the eyes of the law by those secret dealings, higher law dealings of which you were so proud. But these are savage realities. This is treason, not petty slave running in Missouri. This is a desperate drama which the whole nation will look upon.
What had probably taken place? Step one, an insurrection, a civil war, the exposing of a spy ring, a lynching, a revolution.
The second examination tested him in mathematics. A third general examination tested him on factual information and vocabulary.
Who wrote The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse?
Who said, and under what conditions, "I have nothing to offer but blood, toil, tears, and sweat"?
Which does the word deprecate mean? To undervalue, to force down, to denounce with curses, to express disapproval of?
A third examination tested the ability to express oneself in written English. The fourth examination was a test of ability to read with comprehension, French, German, or Spanish.
Translate the Spanish word golondrina. Does it mean burden, camera, swallow, or gondolier?
Translate from the German the word knacken. Does it mean knocker, knock, wrist, or ankle?
Translate from the French the word auteur. Does it mean haughtiness, beauty, keenness, honor, or harshness?
With these examinations over, there was still the oral, dreaded by each contestant because of the fabulous legend of unanswerable questions asked by a special board. To a panel of 6 to 8 inquisitors, each contestant was individually called.
Why do you want to join the Foreign Service?
What makes you think you would be a good representative of the government of the United States?
Where do you want to serve and why?
I suppose you think you'll be an ambassador someday. Why? What is statesmanship?
What is diplomacy? Do you really think you'd make a good Foreign Service officer?
Contestants who came up for the oral examination had already been examined as to their qualifications. Questions such as these were asked to obtain the important answer to the question of whether the contestant had personal characteristics desirable in a diplomat. Did he possess qualities of modesty, ability to think and act under fire, and most important of all, did he have poise? Answers to the oral questions were important only in the sense that the manner in which they were answered was important. The lucky few who withstood the written and oral took their first steps on the rungs of the Foreign Service ladder. After preliminary training in Washington, Jack Phillips was sent to Marseille in the post of probationary vice consul. This was the spring of 1938, with the Spanish War flaring up just across the border from France, over the Pyrenees.
I had been to France with my father as a child and was glad to return. But I'd never been to Marseille.
It is, of course, the second largest city in France, a busy seaport, and one of the important centers of the French Empire. At the office, my most important duty, aside from handling passports and visas, was to look after government interests in Spain.
You the vice consul?
That's right. What can I do for you?
I've just come over the mountains. I am an American. Here are my papers. Will you fix up my passport for me?
Mm-hmm. What's your profession?
I suppose you could call me a soldier.
Yes, I see you're a member of the International Brigade.
Well, I want to go home now. Home to America, where people don't only talk about freedom, but really know what it is.
Well, I'll have this ready for you later in the day. Will you come back?
There's another thing.
Yes?
I understand your office helps in getting jobs on ships as workaways.
Yes, we do.
I have no money. I'd like to get such a job.
Fine, I'll see what I can do. Check with me around 5 this afternoon. Early that afternoon, I went down to the dock to see what could be done about a job for this man on one of the ships in the Marseille Harbor. No sooner had I come in sight of the quay when I heard angry shouts and a mob gathered.
What's going on down here?
There's just been a murder, monsieur.
A murder?
You have heard of the strike sit-down, monsieur? Maybe something new. Everybody refuses to unload. They all just sit down on the ship. And naturally, they stop.
I see.
You had better get away from him, monsieur. There will be a riot, I think.
No jobs for anyone, let alone my friends. The only activity in the docks was violence. And yes, those were the days of the sit-down strikes, even in Marseille. But my job was to take care of Americans who were stranded in this French port city until the boat moved again. And this I did. I found other duties, too, in handling wounded Americans from the International Brigade who were brought across the Spanish border and still found their way to my office needing medical help and pleading to be sent home. In 1939, I was ordered home myself.
Come in.
Sir. Reporting back as ordered, sir.
Well, how did you like Marseille?
Well, it was more exciting than I thought my first job would be. I liked it.
And you did a fine job. And the word probationary is lifted now. You're a full-fledged vice consul.
Thank you, sir.
Sit down, Jack. We've brought you back to Washington for orientation school, also for questioning. In these times, with war a definite possibility, any information you get in these foreign posts is of extreme importance and value to your government. Now that you've got your feet wet, you can really begin to swim in the Foreign Service.
Part of 1939, I was sent to Salonika. I was in one of the sub-offices of the embassy at Athens. While in Salonika, I had opportunity to talk with the British as well as the Greeks, and was there when war was declared, and the British prepared to evacuate.
Well, there go our petrol dumps. The Nazis will never use British petrol now, but that bit of fireworks may cost me my commission.
Well, I'm sorry to see you go.
Oh, I rather imagine we'll be back, you know.
Yes, I think so, too.
Don't know if I will.
I hope so.
Well, cheer out, carry on. You're looking after our interests, you know.
That's our job. After you leave, we'll take over for you.
What happens after you go?
Well, the ship. You know the answer.
You may be new at the game, Jack, but you're learning your job very fast. So long.
Jack Phillips was getting his feet wet indeed in the Foreign Service. He had seen civil war in Spain, the oncoming World War in Greece. After Salonika, he was again brought back to Washington to serve in the State Department, his job being this time in a department devoted to the affairs of prisoners of war and civil internees. In 1941, he was ordered to New Delhi in India. The actual date of his sailing was important. On the afternoon of the day he sailed...
What's the matter with everybody? Is the ship sinking?
Haven't you heard the radio?
Well, no, I've been reading in my cabin.
The Japs have just bombed Pearl Harbor.
Oh, worry me? Well, that's impossible.
Come on, they've got the loudspeaker turned on in the lounge. It's true, all right.
What day is it?
Sunday, December 7th. It's a date to remember. Thank you.
choose not to go to New Delhi after all. My own country was at war. The ship turned back. In 1943, I was sent to London.
Yes, it's a bit noisy in here, Mr. Phillips, but I hope you'll be comfortable.
Thank you. I know a bit about bombings myself. I was in Saloniki.
Well, you knew our chance there, I suppose.
Yes, I had a lot of good friends.
What's your job going to be in the embassy?
Economic warfare.
Good. I suppose you'll be working on aerial wrecking?
Reconnaissance?
Yes, and prison of war interrogation. The war's brought all branches of the government together, you know. Good thing. Well, good luck. Be seeing you between raids, I suppose.
The Foreign Service is organized on a geographical basis, conforming with the political and economic organization of the peoples of the world. It functions much as does a military organization, with a clear and distinct chain of command. The Secretary of State, as the President's representative, issues his orders through the Department of State. The orders are transmitted to the Chief of Mission within any major political area, who in turn, as the direct representative of the President, handles, with the help of his staff, the United States' interests within that area. In time of war, however, a military commander can become a presidential representative. In any given country, the ambassador or minister is responsible for virtually all activities, even including the actions of the military and naval attachés of the nation. From London, Jack Phillips was sent to Algiers, another rung in his Foreign Service career. In Algiers, his job was close liaison again with the Army Air Forces. After his mission, the 4 or 5 months was completed here, he went back to London.
Looking for a taxi, mister?
Oh, yes, thank you very much.
Where to, Governor?
I'm going to the American Embassy.
Right, Al. Been in London before?
Mm-hmm. Sometime back.
Ah, it's fine. Lots of the old landmarks down, you know.
Last time I was here, you could hardly move through traffic. There were so many people around. Where is everybody?
Well, they're mostly in France, Governor.
Oh, these days, of course.
Things are looking up. But we miss the Yanks. Ever heard that sound before?
Have I? Where do we duck? Same old London. Now I really feel at home. In England this time, I was detailed to work with the weather section, whose headquarters were in Cornwall. I had no idea there were so many different angles to this Foreign Service job of mine. Then, on New Year's Eve...
I hate to spoil your New Year's fun, Jack, but I've got some orders for you.
You're not sending me home to the States.
No, no, a little more exciting than that, I think.
Well, may I look at the announcement?
By all means. You'll have to leave and pack in a minute anyway. You'll go in the morning.
Finland.
With a promotion.
Well, that's wonderful.
And you've another treat in store. In Finland, you will meet the enemy face to face.
In Finland, I did meet the enemy, but not in the way I expected.
At the risk of robbing your staff, Herr Phillips, we must ask you to turn over to our headquarters, all nationals, by working as clerks in the consulate.
I believe, Herr Oberleutnant, that such men have diplomatic immunity under international law.
Being British, they are also technically prisoners of war.
I'll be glad to make their records available to you. But we'll see there's no point in putting them in confinement.
They are not interested in their records, Herr Phillips. We already know those details. We want these men.
Foreign nationals employed in our foreign offices during the war sometimes escaped the Nazis and became members of the underground. Then, after the war, these men, if they had survived this work, or confinement, or whatever their fate, invariably returned to our foreign establishment. From Finland, Jack Phillips went on a charter ship to Sweden.
I was bewildered when I arrived in Sweden. Everyone was so prosperous and somehow safe.
Now then, sir, would you like a dessert?
You mean I can get a sweet of some kind?
Yes. Yes, French pastry. Some sweet pastry, a dish like your cream puff with ice cream. Brand of cherry, ice, raspberry or lemon, cake, chocolate. Then, what would you like?
I've forgotten there was anything like that left in the world.
Of course, it is because Sweden is not at war.
Yes, but this seems like a visit to another planet. You're only a few miles from Europe.
I know it is different there. Ah, it is bad. He sometimes is coming back from their people on business trips or yearning for the government. They all say the same thing. But it is a rest is about to find the nation still at peace after Finland.
Well, it's very unreal. I just seem to get used to it. I feel as if I'd like to take all the desserts from the place back to England and Finland and Greece. There, these things mean life and death to the people.
Well, it'll do you no harm to relax now that you are here for a little while.
Peace was not good to me in any form in 1944. There was still too much to do to get it all over with. I'd seen too much suffering in Salonika, England, and Finland to relax. I was disillusioned because I felt these people did not know or care that there was a war going on. While I was in Sweden. Phillips speaking.
Mr. John Phillips?
Yes.
I have a cable for you.
In code?
No, in the clear. Can I read it?
Yes, please.
Father, very ill. If possible, come home at once.
Back to Washington. The department I discovered was very human about personal affairs. I went back to my old desk, but with a new promotion and new chores as a Foreign Service consultant.
Jack Phillips has been termed one of the cream of the new diplomatic crop. He is on his way to becoming an ambassador. The top jobs of ministers and ambassadors are generally personally assigned by the president, who chooses the men best suited, in his opinion, whether they are career or non-career officers. Although a portion of these top drawer assignments will, in the future, continue to go to figures of national importance, the Foreign Service Act of 1946 makes it possible for increasing numbers of Foreign Service officers to become ambassadors and ministers. The activities of a Foreign Service post are as varied as the economic, political, and cultural life of our nation itself. The work of any large mission may be divided roughly into four categories.
Political, the conduct of international relations on the political level, including the negotiation of treaties. This work handled by the ambassador or chief of mission, aided by the counselor and various secretaries of the legation or embassy.
Economic, the handling of international trade, the study and reporting on industrial and agricultural capabilities of a country, the negotiations of loans and other economic transactions between that country and the United States. This is accomplished by an economic counselor and possibly by commercial, agricultural, and mineral attachés.
The counselor and administrative, which includes correspondence, citizenship problems, issuing of visas, shipping and invoices, notarial work, and general administration. A large post may have from 3,000 to 4,000 visitors a week.
The work of the military and naval attachés. Units to handle overseas duty for immigration authorities. The Treasury Department. The Public Health Service. The United States Commercial Company and the War Shipping Administration, to cite a few examples.
Although the organization of such a mission might indicate a clear delineation between economic, political, cultural, and administration activities, actually they all dovetail into each other. It is possible for a Foreign Service officer to deal in rapid succession with a number of cases, such as
negotiate with the foreign government for the abolition of visa fees for American tourists,
report to the American government about a newly appointed government official who may change the existing relationship between governments,
help to eliminate obstructions in the importation to the United States of a badly needed raw product,
report on the dependability or character of local government,
aid American business abroad,
intercede with foreign governments in behalf of American citizens, Americans whose overseas property has been illegally seized.
Protect all rights of an American citizen in respect to granting him a fair hearing when he gets in trouble.
Arrange for shipment home of the body and personal effects of an American citizen killed in an airplane crash.
An American establishment abroad is a bit of transplanted American soil. And all that is the United States of America must be preserved and respected and properly represented.
But despite all his duties, whether as clerk, secretary, consul, minister, or ambassador, his responsibilities stand in the lower bracket. His financial difficulties aside, the Foreign Service officer is a member of a very distinguished service with a justifiably high morale. He sees service throughout the world, knows the peoples and ways of life of many lands. He is performing a service from which he can see the immediate results that are not only vital to the welfare of his own country, but now in the present critical situation of the whole world. Men like Jack Phillips, who possess integrity, courage, poise, intelligence, may well dream of the day when he receives from his president a piece of paper with the great seal of the United States, which begins,
"The President of the United States of America, John Phillips of Washington, D.C., reposing special trust and confidence in your integrity, patriotism, and fidelity to duty, I do hereby appoint you a Foreign Service Officer as Ambassador."
And the President himself has defined the policy of our Foreign Service.
"To establish and maintain friendly relations between the government and people of the United States and the government and people of the country to which they are accredited.
To keep the government of the United States informed regarding political and economic developments abroad, particularly those affecting its interests.
To extend protection to American citizens and promote just American interests in every proper manner.
To interpret faithfully the viewpoint of the American government in any question at issue."
Service of our State Department is the custodian of American liberties abroad. Perhaps the custodian as well of world peace.
You've been listening to Tales of the Foreign Service, feature of the NBC University of the Air, written and produced in cooperation with the State Department and based upon State Department files.